Hello and welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and issues that shape the news. As the clock strikes midnight tonight, the federal government could close its doors once again. For millions of Americans, that means missed paychecks, shuttered offices, and a grinding halt to the daily functions of the world's largest democracy. But shutdowns aren't just about budgets. They are about power, leverage, and political theater. And tonight's showdown is no exception. In Washington, the impasse has escalated into a full-blown standoff. House Republicans, holding the chambers, have pushed a clean, continuing resolution, just funding, no policy riders, to carry operations through November 21st. They argue that attaching demands now would poison the process. Senate Democrats, however, reject that approach. They insist that any extension must include restoration of Affordable Care Act subsidies, reversals of recent Medicaid cuts, and protections for public health programs. Without those, Democrats won't sign on. Last night, Senate Democrats voted down the Republican proposal, further solidifying the path to shutdown. Republicans counter that negotiations over policy should come after the government is open again, accusing Democrats of leveraging critical services for political gain. From the White House, President Trump has stoked the flames. He's warned of irreversible cuts to benefit programs during a funding lapse and has threatened permanent layoffs, even beyond the usual furloughs. He's also blamed Democrats for any hardship. Shutdown pain would be caused by the Democrats, he said, casting the impasse as their failure. Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance has declared the shutdown all but inevitable. I think we're headed to a shutdown. On the Democratic side, leaders see the Republican position as a trap. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has framed the fight as a defense of working families and health care access. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries has insisted that Democrats must push for underlying reforms, not simply acquiesce to funding. Democrats argue that funding extensions devoid of protections would leave millions vulnerable and shift all leverage to the GOP. The public is watching, and many are tired. A recent poll found that nearly two-thirds of Americans oppose a shutdown. Even among Democrats, the divisions are real. 43% oppose a shutdown, even in pursuit of party goals. In this climate, the stakes are high not just for policy, but for public trust. So as the shutdown draws near, the battleground isn't just Congress or the White House, it's narrative. Each side wants the other to blink first. Republicans warn of chaos and cuts. Democrats warn of abandonment and profiteering on pain. Whose story prevails? That's often just as important as the number on the spending bill. Tonight, when the lights go out in Washington, they will turn on somewhere else, across agencies, communities, and households. The drama is just beginning, and if history teaches us anything, it's that shutdowns rarely shrink government. Instead, they expose the fault lines over who controls government, how it's weaponized, and whether the myth of small versus big government still holds any weight in our modern politics. As always, this is Alan, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you prefer as we get ready to look at the history of government shutdowns and the issues that caused the two parties in Washington to set themselves up for a head-on collision and examine the fallout left in the aftermath. Government shutdowns are a modern invention. For nearly two centuries, budget disagreements slowed Washington down, but they didn't close it. That changed in 1974 when Congress passed the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act, a reform born out of the chaos of Watergate and Nixon's attempt to control federal spending unilaterally. This law created the modern budget process, with deadlines, appropriations committees, and continuing resolutions. But with structure came vulnerability. In the late 1970s, the Justice Department issued a strict interpretation. If Congress doesn't authorize spending, federal agencies must stop operating. Suddenly, shutdowns were on the table. At first, they were short and relatively painless. Days, sometimes hours, often barely noticed. But the stage was set for shutdowns to evolve from bureaucratic quirks into political weapons. The real drama came in 1995 and 1996, when Speaker Newt Gingrich squared off against President Bill Clinton. Republicans had just seized control of the House for the first time in 40 years, carried in on Gingrich's bold Contract with America, a 10-point plan promising tax cuts, a balanced budget amendment, welfare reform, and tighter controls on Washington spending. To Gingrich, this was a mandate to reshape government. Clinton, chastened by the midterm defeats of 1994, was in no mood to be steamrolled. He rejected the Republican demand for deep cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, education, and environmental programs. Gingrich's strategy was to force the issue. If Clinton wouldn't agree, Republicans would let the government shut down, gambling that the public would blame the president. The first shutdown came in November 1995 and lasted 5 days. When Congress and the White House still couldn't agree, a second shutdown followed in mid-December, dragging on for 21 days into January 1996, the longest in U.S. history at that time. The effects rippled nationwide. Roughly 800,000 federal workers were furloughed. National parks and monuments closed their gates, costing tourism-heavy towns millions in lost revenue. Passport applications piled up. Federal contractors sat idle. Even health research stalled at the National Institutes of Health. It was a tangible reminder that government touches daily life in countless unseen ways. Politically, the gamble backfired. Polls showed the public largely blamed Gingrich and the GOP. Gingrich himself inflamed the narrative when he publicly complained that Clinton had made him exit Air Force One from the rear door and ignored him on the flight back from Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin's funeral. The press pounced, portraying him as petty. Headlines framed the shutdown as Newt's tantrum. Clinton, meanwhile, cast himself as the defender of ordinary Americans. His approval ratings rose as he stood firm. By the end, Republicans accepted a deal that preserved funding for Medicare, education, and environmental protections. Clinton emerged stronger, paving the way for his 1996 reelection. The 1995 to 96 shutdowns were a turning point. Shutdowns ceased being rare accidents and became deliberate weapons. Gingrich had sought to bend the president to his will. Instead, he revealed the risks of using the government itself as a bargaining chip. Nearly two decades later, the script replayed with new characters. In October 2013, House Republicans, fueled by the Tea Party movement, demanded that President Barack Obama agree to delay or defund the Affordable Care Act as a condition of passing a continuing resolution. Their rallying cry was, "Defund Obamacare." Obama refused. He argued that the Affordable Care Act had been passed by Congress, signed into law, and upheld by the Supreme Court. To gut it through a budget standoff, he said, would be extortion. In his words, "You don't get to extract a ransom for doing your job." The government shut down for 16 days. About 850,000 federal employees were furloughed, while another million worked without pay. National parks and monuments closed, frustrating tourists and veterans alike. One famous scene showed World War II veterans pushing past barricades at their memorial. Agencies halted routine services, and the Congressional Budget Office later estimated the shutdown cost the economy about $24 billion. Public opinion turned swiftly. Polls showed Americans blamed Republicans more than Democrats, and the Tea Party's brand took a hit. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell eventually brokered a deal with Senate Democrats to reopen the government and extend the debt ceiling. Obamacare survived intact, and Obama emerged with his signature legislative achievement reinforced rather than dismantled. The 2013 shutdown underscored the same lesson as 1995 to 96. Shutdowns rarely achieved their stated goals. Instead, they hardened divisions and damaged the party seen as holding the line too tightly. Donald Trump took the Gingrich playbook and pushed it further. In late 2018, he demanded $5.7 billion for his border wall, and when Democrats refused, the government shut down. What followed was the longest shutdown in U.S. history, 35 days. Federal workers missed two paychecks, air travel snarled as TSA agents and air traffic controllers stopped showing up, and food inspections slowed. Like Gingrich, Trump expected Democrats to buckle. Like the Tea Party, he framed the standoff as a defense of principle. But in the end, the wall funding didn't materialize. Public opinion forced his hand, and he signed a resolution to reopen government without his demand met. Together, these three shutdowns form a clear arc. Gingrich set the stage, the Tea Party reprised it, and Trump supersized it. And each time, the side wielding the shutdown as a weapon discovered that the public often punishes the perceived aggressor. And now, here we are again. September 30th, 2025. The deadline has arrived. Congress is at an impasse. President Trump and his allies insist they won't sign another stopgap resolution unless it includes deep cuts and structural changes to the federal government. Democrats refuse, warning of reckless governance. The rhetoric is sharper than in years past. Trump has made clear he sees shutdowns not as failures, but as opportunities. His rebranding of the Department of Defense as the Department of War was a signal. He wants a government that looks tougher, more centralized, more aligned with his vision. To Trump and his supporters, allowing a shutdown is a way of demonstrating strength. To Democrats, it's a demonstration of chaos. Polarization is so severe that compromise itself has become politically toxic. And that makes this shutdown less about numbers in a budget and more about what kind of government will exist when the lights eventually come back on. A late September 2025 survey shows nearly two-thirds of Americans oppose a shutdown. Among Democrats, 43% oppose a shutdown, even if their party's priorities are at stake. In other words, both parties face risk, but the public mood is strongly anti-shutdown. The political ramifications for each party are difficult to predict, but history suggests whichever side is branded as the aggressor will shoulder the blame, which means that rather than working together to find a solution, both parties' propaganda machines will be working overtime in hoping they can convince the public that their opponent is to blame. Lost in all of this is the irony that the people with the power to cause shutdowns rarely feel the pain. Members of Congress still collect their paychecks. Presidents still live in the White House. It's federal workers who suffer first. Hundreds of thousands face furloughs. TSA agents and air traffic controllers, who are classified as essential, must work without pay. Families awaiting Social Security checks or food assistance worry about delays. Small businesses that rely on federal contracts grind to a halt. Even the nation's economic pulse goes dark. The Labor Department suspends data releases. Wall Street and Main Street alike lose a compass. Shutdowns remind us that government isn't an abstract machine. It's a network of people, programs, and systems that millions depend on daily. When that network seizes up, it's not Washington elites who suffer. It's us. There is another thing the public should consider. For decades, Americans have been told that one party stood for more government and the other for less. It was a neat slogan, easy to digest. But history tells us otherwise. Ronald Reagan talked about government being the problem, yet defense spending surged under his watch. George W. Bush presided over the creation of the Department of Homeland Security and the largest new entitlement since Medicare, prescription drug coverage under Medicare Part D, and Donald Trump, who campaigned as a disruptor, expanded defense spending, built new enforcement mechanisms, and now pushes to remake entire departments in his second term. The truth is, both parties grow government, just in different directions. Democrats build safety nets and create programs to force their social engineering initiatives upon the people. Republicans build armies, police forces, and surveillance systems. Shutdowns don't make government smaller. They don't liberate us from bureaucracy. They simply paralyze the system, leaving the question of whose government we'll return to once the doors reopen. The myth of small versus big government lingers in rhetoric, but in reality, it's a battle over control, not size. Shutdowns make that myth impossible to ignore. Shutdowns were once viewed as embarrassing lapses in governance. Today, they've become deliberate weapons. Clinton and Gingrich, Obama and Boehner, Trump then, and Trump again today. Each standoff tells us less about budgets and more about the state of our democracy. Shutdowns leave scars, shaken workers, delayed services, and fractured trust. But they also leave lessons. The clearest lesson is this: America's government doesn't vanish when the lights go out in Washington. It lingers, wounded, waiting for partisans to decide what kind of government they want to resurrect. And so, as the midnight deadline passes, we aren't just watching a shutdown. We're watching a ritual, a recurring drama that tells us who wields power and how far they're willing to go to prove it. That concludes this week's episode. If you find this podcast informative or entertaining, please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. The same goes if you tune in on YouTube. Also, if you have anything you would like to add to the conversation, or if there is a topic you would like to see covered on the show, please leave a comment. Until next time, remember this: get informed and fight to keep your political representatives accountable. Your freedom depends on it.